We want to appeal to your ears.
Word forth, German!
We're going to run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here we go, Maz. Are you ready for the week?
Absolutely, I'm ready for the week.
So we said last week, we talked about on Friday, on the Agenda Free Friday. And folks, we'll take your calls early and often, by the way. 617-779-0985. Call us at any time. 617-779-0985. That this better not be their last roundup. You know, and I just made the point that you don't trade off Jimmy Garoppolo for one more year of Brady and championships. Brady's got to be here for 3-4 years, you know, 2-3 years anyway. And this could be the last roundup. You've got to contend here the next couple of years, or trading Garoppolo made no sense. That was sort of my point on Friday. This better not be the last roundup. Do you fear that it is?
I do fear that it is. And when I say I fear it, like, to me, this is how I think of it. I put it in these terms. I am concerned about their future. Okay, I'm concerned about the Patriots' future. And so the quarterback thing is central to it. I'm sorry, I can't let the Garoppolo thing go.
How about the next couple of years?
Yeah.
Are you worried about the next couple of years?
Yes. Yes, I would have felt better about it if Garoppolo were here. Because I don't rule out the idea that things with the quarterback could deteriorate relatively quickly. Okay, I don't rule that out. So I know a lot of people do, and that all of a sudden now, well, you know, he has a good year, and that means another good year is coming. Not to me, it doesn't. I don't look at it that way. I think you take every year as it comes. So we'll see what he looks like in the fall. It'll probably be good, but you don't know that for sure. And the quarterback part of it, to me, is a big part of it. And then on top of it, you're going to lose the coordinators, and I can't help but turn back the clock. And I said this to you in the email exchange today. I can't help but turn back the clock, look at all the moves Belichick made last offseason, and wonder if he made those believing that he was going to have Garoppolo. Like, I wonder about that. And I know that you can overhaul things to a certain degree during the offseason. You get a whole new draft class coming in. There's a free agent class. But they didn't use any draft picks really last year. They used a couple. And so I don't know how much they really benefited from the drafts here in the last couple of years. Like, I look at it and wonder.
You don't think they're the favorite next year?
I don't know. I don't feel as good about it now as I have in other years. Like, there were other years where they went into the Super Bowl, and I thought they're going to be good again next year. Guaranteed.
You don't feel that way?
I don't.
Is this the last roundup, Murray?
No, I don't think that it is. And because the quarterback is still playing at the top of his game, I think Belichick, while miffed of the two, if anyone was going to walk, if he did, I wouldn't be surprised, because there's probably some bad feelings about, you know, this trade of Garoppolo. But, you know, I think he has to bury the shovel, go into the draft a quarterback, and start anew. You know, he has to try to find somebody else that he can bring up like he did with that kid. And I think they're going to still be here for the next 3 years.
Are they going to be here because they're that good or because no one else is?
No, I'm talking about, they're going to be in Foxborough. Are they going to be back at the Super Bowl
next
year?
No, this is what
year?
I mean. Are they championship contenders the next couple of years? Is this the last roundup?
No, it's not, because they will be here the next couple of years because of those two. If Brady's playing at this level, yeah, they're still the favorite next year.
See, I'm not convinced of that. I'm not. I have less certainty about them than I have had probably. And look, maybe it's just because they're older and they're nearer the end, and the ESPN story and everything sort of filters into your mind, and you start to wonder a little bit more. But with each every time they get here, they are one step closer to the end. And they have to be.
We've been saying that for 9 years.
Well, I know that, Murray, but the quarterback, and I
know it has
that.
To end.
I just, on this one, I look at it and I say, okay, now the coordinators are all going. You had the answer at quarterback. So, again, that's a big part of it for me. If Garoppolo were still here, I'd say you got another 10 years of this.
Okay, I'm not talking about the next 10. I'm talking about the next 2 or 3.
I don't know.
Is this the end of an era?
I don't know. Edelman's coming off an injury. Gronk is, you know, unreliable in some ways, and also the contract changes a little bit after this season, so I don't know what's going to happen there. Maybe they keep him. Like, you know, Butler's going to go, I think.
Who challenges him in the conference? Just next year.
So, again, I don't have faith in the rest of the league either. I don't. I'm not going to tell you that. I think some team's on the come, because I don't. But I look at it. I try to judge it looking at them. Okay, that's how I try to look at it. And that if they're on top of their game, everybody's gunning for them. And I'm just not as confident as I've been in other years that they are going to be in the same place. I'm not.
Okay, last time they were in this spot, going for 3 out of 4, and losing both coordinators, the next couple of years were down years. I'm going to put that in air quotes, because those are down years by their standards. In 05 and 06, they played on wild card weekend, the horror with the scrubs. They played on wild card weekend. And in 06, they made it all the way to the AFC Championship game. But 05, 06 were kind of, if you look back at it historically, kind of reset years. Do you think we're headed for one of those? I mean, the last time they were in this spot, and again, losing both coordinators the same year, sort of tied into it. They played a ton of football in 03, 04, just like the last couple of years here. And it all sort of came crashing in 2005 and 2006. Is that what you think we're headed for? You think we're right there, Murray? You think we're right back wherever the hell we are next year, Atlanta?
I do. Looking at those two seasons, that 05 team was ravaged by injuries, and Brady was banged up that whole year. So you could tell almost by the middle of the season, it just wasn't in the cards for them. And then the following year, you know, they screwed that up in terms of personnel and being cheap and not getting him weapons. And I think that they learned a big lesson from that.
So 2005, Teddy Bruschi suffers a stroke. Ted Johnson retires. I think that's the year Rodney ripped his knee up in Pittsburgh. So that happened, yes. All that happened.
So that can happen, but 06, like, that was on them, and I think they learned a big lesson from that, because look at the moves they made going into 2007.
Okay, so that's one of the things I want to ask, because I had another friend of mine today. And I asked him, I come out to Minnesota. He's like, no, but I'm kind of torn, because it could be the end of an era. I keep hearing this, end of an era. No, it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be, because then trading Garoppolo is a real mistake. That's not the trade-off. You're not trading 10 years of Garoppolo for one more Super Bowl year. You're trading it for two or three. And so this better not be the end of an era, and I don't think it is. I think the league, you know, in 2005, the league was also much better. Peyton Manning and the Colts were right there every single year, and it was a young Ben Roethlisberger, and it was a different...
Well, see, that's what I was going to say.
It was a different landscape.
Yeah, the landscape was very different back then.
It was a better league. It was a better league in 2005. Last roundup. Could be this... Are we even sure they're going to win this game?
No.
I am.
I'm not.
I feel really positive about this.
I'm not. Frankly, look, I'm picking Philly.
So you're picking Philly, Mass.
I am. I'm picking
Philly. You're officially coming out at 2 o'clock on Monday and saying that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, look, Brady, you know, if Nick Foles gets hurt this week or something, well, then I'm changing my mind. But if you're asking me right now, who do I think is the more complete team? And I think, you know, I've been thinking about this over the weekend on the flight out here. My gut's with Philly. I think Philly is the more complete, more balanced team. The Patriots have the edge of quarterback, hands down, and a coach. But typically, when it's just coach and quarterback, they haven't won, I don't think. I mean, look, now they've only lost twice, in Super Bowls when they've been here, so it's hard to pick against them. But I do look at Philly as being the more complete, more balanced team. If Carson Wentz were here, I wouldn't hesitate at all. I'd pick Philly. I think Philly would be the better team, is the better team when Wentz is on the field. And, you know, if you're asking me now, I'm going to roll the dice that Doug Peterson can somehow find a way to make it work with Nick Foles. Because, honestly, I don't believe in that Patriot defense. I don't.
So you got the Eagles, Maz.
I do. I'm picking the Eagles.
Okay. So that's going to be on the board. You want to talk to Maz about that? By all means. You want to talk about your feelings on where this Patriots team is? Last call? Last roundup? End of an era? Do you feel that? You shouldn't. I don't. And it shouldn't be anyway.
Felger and Maz. Felger and Maz.
To your ears. Blunt force trauma!
I'm gonna run it right down their throat!
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, Patriots fans, are you still struggling to find reasons to hate the Philadelphia Eagles?
Yeah!
Well, struggle no more, because Felger and Mass have got you covered.
Learning to hate them, learning to hate the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, you know I hate the Eagles.
I'm all ears, brother.
Their coach, Doug Peterson, I don't like his California hair. Who does he think he is with that hair?
Yeah, he always looks like he's wearing one of those visors with the hair attached to it.
Yeah, he looks like that guy from Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives with that stupid hair.
Yeah, Guy Fieri. Yeah, serve us some burgers, Peterson, you loser.
Yeah, f*** Doug Peterson's hair and f*** the Eagles.
Look, if it's Peterson against Belichick, how do you not pick Belichick? The Patriots have the edge at coach and quarterback, like always. What game don't they? They always do. They always do. I just look at Philly, and candidly, and I admit I'm guilty of looking at the Patriots and comparing them to Patriots teams of other years. I don't think these guys are that good compared to some of the other teams they've had.
They're definitely not.
And so, you know, the 2011 team, I think I picked them that week against the Giants, and maybe that's what I'm fighting to. And I knew in my heart the Giants were a complete better team. And, I you know, again, the quarterback thing's a huge variable.
How was the coach thing in that game?
Coughlin was not intimidated.
That's what I'm trying to tell you, that was a real coach going against Belichick.
So, okay.
Is this guy?
I doubt it. I mean, he might be a real coach, but...
Here's how I feel. I mean, pick it and stick it. What do I know? I'm not going to totally disrespect the Eagles like I did the Jaguars last week, because I was wrong about that. And, you know, the Jaguars gave us much more of a game than I thought we were going to get. So if you want to tell me the Eagles are going to give you a game, fine. I mean, every Patriots Super Bowl is close. So if they can keep it close, God bless. Mazel tov. I'm not going to argue with you. I can't wrap my head around the possibility of Doug Peterson making the right calls in the last 5 minutes of the game to close out that game. I can't see a scenario where he does it and Blake Bortles. What's the diff? Nick Foles does it. You know, it takes Coughlin and it takes a guy like that to close you out. I don't think the Eagles are good enough to close you out. Are they good enough to give you a game? Sure.
Or you have to make a mistake.
Or you've got to bollocks it up. Yep.
So Wes Welker dropping the ball against the Giants. I mean, hell, you could argue the Patriots okay, should have won that game.
But that also took Eli Manning scoring, I think, twice in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Lead him down the field in the fourth quarter.
So listen, I told you. I'm not telling you. I wouldn't bet this game. But I feel like Philly's been the best team in the league this year. That's the way I would put it.
Okay. Let's go to your thoughts here. Everything on the table. You feel this is the last roundup. Maz doesn't love this game. Pete and Delaware, lead us off today. Go ahead, Pete.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you look at if you lose two coordinators, you lose your future franchise quarterback, and then you got to take possibly a first-round pick again this year to get a quarterback, which won't even be coming for a couple of years. This is the most vulnerable the New England Patriots have been in probably a decade as far as having the problems that every other team has, and even more if you look at the quarterback, each quarterback situation.
So that's a really good point about, you know, they desperately need to start restocking at the draft, desperately. The fact that they have to take a quarterback with one of these picks kind of hurts them because you can't help the roster there.
Right. Well, you know, I look at them invulnerable as a word I think we've used a lot this year. I feel they are more vulnerable on the field this year than they've been in a long time. And long term, I feel they are also vulnerable. That's the word.
Sal in Maine, what do you got for us, Sal?
Hi, Mike. Can I talk to Tony for a second?
Yes, please.
Tony, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Sal. Go ahead.
I don't think that rant from last Friday on the statues should be overlooked. It was tremendous. And I would like your opinion on something quick. I'll say it, and then you can respond. I think if you're going to have a sports statue like Rocky up there, I think it should be replaced by Joe Frazier's statue. Because he resurrected boxing in Philly for decades. And he was the actually true adopted son of Philly.
Of course he should. Of course it should be. How about a real sports boxing legend versus a 4-foot-tall actor?
So look, honestly, I don't care who they put up there. I mean, Joe Frazier's a good one. You want to pick other guys in Philadelphia sports history? Bobby Clark? I don't know. Fine. Build a statue of Bobby Clark. What do I care? It's your city. Do what you want. But pick someone who was real. Don't give me a fictional character. What are we doing, picking people out of movies for crying out loud? We're going to start doing that crap. Murray, let's go see the town. Okay, well, let's go see Good Will Hunting again and put a statue of Robin Williams up next to the Bunker Hill Monument. It's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. It's unbelievable. You got to pick some jackass out of a movie to build a statue about?
I love that character. I'm going to put my arm around and say, it's not your fault. Take a photo while I'm crying.
Jeff in the car. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey guys, how you doing? It's kind of funny that you brought up everybody keeps saying the end of era. I've been to the last two Super Bowls because of saying, I kept saying to myself, oh, this is probably Brady's last Super Bowl, and I keep going. And this time I'm like, I'm not going to even go because it's not the last time that he's going to play in the Super Bowl probably. And we keep doing that also. It's the same feeling as when we're down 10 every single game in the playoffs. You know, how do you not sit there and say, oh, we're probably going to win?
Look, all I'm saying is it better not be. I said this on Friday. So, I mean, I don't think it is, and it better not be. If it's the end of an era and this is the last year, then they should have kept Garoppolo and just turned the thing over. The whole premise is trading 10 years of Garoppolo for 3 of Brady. Then you can justify that. And even then, I don't know if it's justifiable, but at least you can start to justify it. 10 years of Garoppolo for 3 of Brady. If it's 10 years of Garoppolo for just one last trip, and it's to the mall, well, that's not good enough. It's not good enough. And just so the context is, again, I think there are some Patriots fans who are debating this week about coming out here. I mean, because it's really not a great place for a Super Bowl. And normally, why would you come here in the middle of February? But, oh, it could be the last one. So I want a bit of history. This is the last one. It better not be the last one. I just keep saying that.
So when they went through that drought there in the middle, I remember how many shows did we do where we'd say, are they going to win another one? What do you think? What does your gut say? And I think we all agree generally, yes, they're going to get back there. They're too good not to get back there and to get to the top of the mountain again. And not just get there, but win it. And I think we even said one, maybe even two. They can get two more. But now, like, I just think as you get closer and closer here to the end, that it does become a question of, realistically, how much longer can you do this? I'd have felt totally different about it if Garoppolo were still here. I would.
Eddie in Indianapolis. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, guys. Two quick questions. After the morning rally at Gillette and the players thanking the fans and saying they couldn't have done it without us, you know that. I wanted to know how genuine that is. So as a couple of guys who've been around pro athletes, is that lip service? Do they truly appreciate fans because they can feed off the energy of the fans? And do they feel the fans are part of their overall ability to succeed? And then secondly, what time is early for the Sports Hub party at B-Dubs on Saturday? And are Radio World passes available for sale? And that's all.
Okay, so the passes, I just think you have to show up.
Yeah, Radio Row, you just show up.
Oh, I'm sorry. He said Radio Row. I thought he said the Patriots Saturday.
He did.
Our Saturday party. Our Saturday party is at the Buffalo Wild Wings at the University of Minnesota campus, okay? And this was a huge hit the last couple of years that we've done it in Houston and out in Arizona. Last year in Houston, they were lined up around the block. Be a little tougher to do out here with it being 7 degrees, so you want to get there on time. It's from 1 to 5:30 p.m. Central Time, local time, Minneapolis time, starting at 1 p.m. at the Buffalo Wild Wings at the University of Miami campus. I don't think it costs anything, does it?
No.
Yeah, just show
get
up.
There early.
Show up. We'll all be there. We'll be broadcasting live from the venue. They're going to put the Bruins game on TV after we're done, and the Bruins play that night. So that's the deal on Saturday for the party. First thing you said about the fans. Yeah, I haven't been down there. I haven't covered the team on a regular basis for a while. But let me tell you this. When I did cover the team, which was through 08, call it, they didn't think they had a great home fan base. They didn't love the crowd at Gillette. They didn't love it. The players didn't. They complained all the time about cheering, you know, that the Patriots fans cheered on third down, except it was when they were on offense, not on defense. And I always remember the defensive players would say to me, Felger, would you tell them that they're supposed to cheer on defense on third down? On offense, you'd be quiet. Like, and they, you know, the things that we all see, the third quarter, dead zone, because the red seats, you know, are right there on top of the field, and no one in the reds, you know, can get down in time because they're all hobnobbing up in the thing, and just a quiet stadium. And oh, they it was also an era. This was also a time when the Red Sox would be playing a playoff game. You know, this was great. What's his name? Steve McNair went in for a touchdown, late touchdown in a regular season game, and all of a sudden the place erupted. And that's because I think Trot Nixon hit a home run against either the A's or the Indians. I can't remember now. But there would be a time when there would be big cheers for Red Sox moments in the middle of Patriots games. And the players used to not love the Gillette crowd. Like, this is a crappy football crowd.
So that said, don't you think
so now that's 10 years ago. Maybe it's better. I don't know. But I don't think Gillette and Foxborough has a great football crowd. I don't.
So I felt like the crowd was a little bit of a factor, a little bit, in that Jacksonville game, though. That once they sort of got rolling, the crowd got into it, and there was energy there.
That was nuts.
Yeah.
Was...
So I think that, you know, and again, all the, you know, the Tennessee game, they could have played that one on the moon. They would have won 35-7.
This is a whole different side topic. I mean, the support and the interest in the team locally is obviously through the roof. The actual stadium experience, you know, it's just not up there. It's not like Denver or Kansas City or Seattle or, you know, places like that that you want to throw out there. It's just not. It never has been. Probably never will be for, you know, confluence of reasons. So when they say today, we couldn't have done it without you, thank you for the fans, maybe just a little lip service.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Thanks for ending your workday with Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Dumb move.
And streaming at CBSBostonSports.com.
Curry gets the free throw. 49. Al Horford will bounce it in. Kyrie will grab it. He will try from half court. It is no good. Streamers fly from the ceiling. As for the first time in three tries, Golden State holds home court against the Celtics in a mid-season classic. Final score, Golden State 109, Boston 105.
Outside of the back and forth between Kyrie and Curry, that's the most frustrating loss of the year for me. They had him, and they let him off the hook. And my biggest complaint was Jaylen.
When did the Celts have him?
I mean, when they're up, what, 5 with like 3 minutes to play, like they let it get away from them. And Al Horford didn't have another good night in the paint. And the other thing that really frustrated
me. Were they
me,
up 5 with 3 minutes left?
Or 3 to 5, whatever it was. They were up with about 3:26 left in that game. And my biggest complaint is that Jaylen Brown, how does he have 14 points in the first quarter and he ends up with 20? Like, I don't know if that's misuse in terms of Brad Stevens or he got complacent, but he was my biggest complaint of that night. Like, you can't have 14 points in the fourth quarter and finish up with 20. That's ridiculous.
What did Jason Tatum have in that game? I believe he had 4.
4 points. Yeah, it wasn't a good night for him. But, it mirrored the game that he had against them the first time that they played back in November.
Well, so that's one thing that stood out. In the two Warriors games, Jaylen Brown shows up. 22 and 20 points. I mean, you're right. He faded in the second half. But 22 and 20. I think Jason Tatum in those two games, 12 and 4.
Yeah, he wilted.
And Jason Tatum's feels like he's wilted the last couple weeks overall.
I think he's hit a wall. I didn't see the whole game on Saturday night, so I can't tell you what happened at the end of the game. But to me, if you're asking me, I'd pay more attention to Tatum if I were Golden State. I think he can hurt you more, but that's just my 2 cents.
So I think the Celts hung in there. I watched almost the whole thing. I think the Celts hung in there terrific. It was really good back-and-forth game. I didn't feel they were outclassed. I feel they missed Marcus Smart.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, when you have Curry going for 49... I mean, you're not telling me Marcus Smart makes a difference, but the knucklehead can't keep his hand off of a pitcher frame or a glass coffee table or whatever the hell he did. You know, the previous two games, the last game in Boston, Curry was virtually a non-factor. It looked like he had 16 points, but it felt like even less than that. And the game before was 23. Marcus Smart's a big part of that. So no Marcus Smart, all of a sudden Curry can't miss from the three, and he goes for 49 points.
And some of those threes he's hitting from the pocket.
Oh, ridiculous.
It was absolutely stupid.
When he gets going like that, I'm sorry, that's breathtaking.
Oh, it is.
It is. When he starts launching, like, it is unbelievable. There's no one else like that.
And you know it's good as soon as it leaves his hand. Like, it, just from the arc of it, he's unbelievable.
Oh, my God.
And the release, it's so fast.
What's the timeline? The little line that juts out, is that 28 feet?
I think that's right.
He starts launching from there.
Right.
It's like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, and that's where, so you're right, not having Smart, what's his best attribute? The ability to frustrate and annoy. He did it in that first game in November, even though he couldn't hit anything, as usual. But his defense and all of that other stuff that he brings, they totally missed that on Saturday.
So another thing that I just couldn't help but notice was, once again, and I give you credit for this, I mean, you keep going, like the Patriots. Celtics keep going and going and going and going, you know? It became a free throw game with, I don't know what it was, 45 seconds, a minute left, and every time, the Celtics made it count every time down the floor. Either they took the easy layup, foul. Rozier at one point hit a miracle three-pointer, turnaround three-pointer, foul. And they kept pressuring, kept going and going and going and going. And Golden State just handled it without a sweat. And this is going to sound silly, but every time they got the ball in, they made their free throws. They got the ball in, they made their free throws. Just like you think every NBA team would be able to do. Except the Warriors did it. And I couldn't help but think of that Houston Rockets game last month,
that they're going to pull it out somehow.
When the Celtics did the exact same thing to Houston, Houston just couldn't do it. Houston burned their timeouts, had trouble getting the ball in, had to take a few call timeouts before the 5 second call. Harden takes a couple charges, but it was the exact same situation. All Houston had to do at the end of that game was inbound the ball and make your free throws. All they had to do. And when I saw Golden State do it without a sweat, every time they got to Curry, he made his free throws. It was like no issue. And there was even one player, remember when Draymond Green jumped in there and got the ball in bounds real quick, and they mentioned it on the ABC broadcast? I immediately thought of Houston, and I said to myself, I don't care how good Houston is or what Houston's ever going to beat that team, because the Warriors are the Patriots in this scenario, and Houston's like everybody else. They're idiots. They don't know how to play. And I don't know. That just stood out to me at Golden State. They handled that end-of-the-game situation flawlessly, like no sweat, where Houston sharted, basically. What else? How about some more great Cleveland and Isaiah Thomas back and forth? Now, they've won 2 straight for the first time in over a month. But they did it yesterday with Isaiah Thomas on the bench in the fourth quarter. Okay? And it's starting to, like, pile up on Isaiah Thomas. He's, like, getting openly blamed by media people in press conferences for shot selection. I saw one this morning. He was getting openly blamed for the defensive metrics on the Cavaliers. And he's starting to chirp back and forth. Like, here's an exchange from over the weekend, Jim, if you have it, on his shot selection there in Cleveland.
Has anyone in the organization approached you about shot selection, about your shot selection?
No.
It hasn't been a topic.
What do you think about that?
I've had people in the locker room kind of wonder about
who.
I can't tell you who.
Hey, it's like that.
I'm just,
I mean, if they're worried about my shot selection, they must not have seen me play the last few years. That's all I can say about that. If somebody's worried about that, what did you train me here for? To not shoot? To not find my rhythm? To not be Isaiah Thomas? I can't be anybody else. So whoever's saying that, I mean, I don't know what I'm here for if I'm not here to score the ball and make plays after being off 7 months.
Okay, this is getting ugly. And the one I heard
predictable though.
The one I heard this morning was about their defensive metrics. I think they ranked dead last in the NBA in defensive efficiency.
They're brutal. Yeah, they're brutal.
And Isaiah said something very similar. He said, you know, this team is ranked in the bottom five the entire season before I even got on the floor. They ranked in the bottom five in this stat. Now I'm here and it's all my fault? And it's, they're all just picking on Isaiah and piling on Isaiah. That team is a mess.
Okay, but so you know who's behind that?
LeBron.
It's got to be LeBron. Who else is it going to be? It's got to totally be LeBron.
I mean, you got the media guy says, has anyone talked about your shot selection? And Isaiah says, no. How do you feel about that? He goes, well, I've had people, and the reporter's like, no, I've had people here in the locker room tell me that they don't like your shot. So, like, guys are openly talking.
Did you hear it, or did you watch the video, the accompanying video?
No, I saw the video.
Oh, yeah, because you see his body language completely change, because he's, you know, not really defensive. He's Isaiah. But at that point in the interview, you see him when he's like, oh, who said that? Like, he backs off, and you see his body language completely change. He gets angry because he wants to know who's talking crap. This team hates each other. It's just getting worse by the game. There's one pass that Kevin Love makes to Isaiah Thomas in that game against Indiana, too, where he takes the ball after a rebound. It's like, oh, here. Like, oh, it's great. Like, it's just getting so bad.
Oh, they're all.
Did you see Kevin Love throw the shorts on Jeff Green's face, too, over the weekend?
No.
Oh, it's great. It's just getting worse by the game, I'm telling you.
They're all on Kevin Love. They're all blaming Kevin Love. They're all blaming Isaiah. And Isaiah's got a point. I'm sorry. That team has had a rough go of it even before he got on the floor. They sucked defensively from game one.
Yeah, but you know what? To me, the defensive part of it I leave out. Because they knew what they were getting there. He and LeBron were a bad match from the start. They both need the ball. It was a bad match. And now I'm starting to think Jimmy Stewart's right that Isaiah's going to get traded by next week.
Thank you.
I'm starting to believe that. I mean, the deadline's in, what, 10 days?
Okay, so I just wanted to give you those items. A little quick Celtics minute. You want to mix those in with our football calls, by all means, I promise. Right back to you after this in our long commercial-free segment here from Minneapolis.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
The Patriots are back in Foxborough again for the second straight week as they take on the Carolina Panthers. Both teams 2-1 entering this game.
Brady has already been hit 19 times. The last time Brady was hit that much through the first 3 weeks of a season was 2006.
This is going to test that whole Brady process and the Brady theory in your book. So good luck, fella.
This hour of the program brought to you by Jeff Carbone Insurance. We're here on NBC Sports Boston, simulcast across New England and the country. They're running a double box now with the Patriots team plane arriving in Minneapolis. That plane is so badass, I can't even, I'm not even a Patriots fan, and I see that plane, and I'm like, that's awesome. That plane is a red, white, and blue phallus right in your face. This is, here come the Patriots, and you can just take a gander at the size of this one.
You like the trophies on the tail fin?
I love the whole thing. Where are the trophies on the tail fin?
Oh, yeah. You can't see it now. They got five Lombardis on that tail fin.
Holy crap. That plane is so badass. I can't tell you.
Room for one more?
So, Michael Hurley, CBS Boston Sports, joins us here from the guest chair, which is sponsored by Big Y World Class Market, here from the food court. What you heard there, Hurley, coming back from break,
was that negative Jim Murray from the negative media bashing Tom Brady.
Good boy, Murray.
Even though Brady doesn't listen to the media and ignores outside noise, he splashed media comments all over his documentary.
You know,
there's the latest. Let me finish.
Disgusted.
There's the latest. Felger and Murray with a little Sarge mixed in heading into week four against Carolina. I was dreading making the documentary. I think I got off relatively easy. There's so much worse he could come up with if they wanted to go dig deep. I hope they don't go back to 09 or 2011. Then I'm in deep, deep trouble. But Murray, that is Brady's version of...
Yeah, sure is. Yeah, I don't have to tell you. We're all eventually victims of the industrial take complex. That's mine.
So good luck, fella.
You made the Brady, Tom versus Time Part 2. I was like, oh, really? Let me find it. And then I heard it, and I was like, oh.
So good luck, fella.
I love it. Give me the whole thing, Jimmy.
Wear it like a badge of honor, Murray.
Give me Murray's whole take.
This is going to test that whole Brady process and the Brady theory in your book. Yeah. So good luck, fella.
No. Just the tone. It's like, okay, Tommy, here we go with the avocado ice cream. Good luck, pal. 4 months later, welcome to the Super Bowl 52, Murray, Felger, and Mass.
I think that was Brady actually providing the score to that, just tapping a key on his piano, just playing Murray on repeat, like ding, 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 ding. You know who else made the negative media in that episode? Yours truly.
Oh, I guess you.
Oh, yeah, I heard you.
A known anti-Brady media member.
You were asking a question, weren't you?
Yeah. So, I'm one of them. Me and Murray.
I did. I saw that too. Congratulations, you made it as well.
So good luck,
fella. But I have to say, I was disgusted with myself because I watched that episode one, and I had a takeaway that matched your takeaway, where he says, "I don't listen to the media," and yet in his you know handpicked documentary, it's all the media clippings. And it was just sort of like, well, he might a little, but which is okay, you know. Everyone needs a little kick in the butt.
Good luck, fella.
Sounded like an 80-year-old grandpa. Now I don't understand why he doesn't train with whiskey and building a house. Good luck with you, fella.
And so good luck, fella.
Your book and your quinoa. Oh God,
Hurley, what do you make of the Brady documentary so far?
I think it's been all right. I think I'm good with the 15 minutes. I think that's a digestible. Setting for such a thing, and I think it's actually kind of cool. Like the second one, you know, we always hear, you know, he's worked with Tom House in the offseason, then he does a press conference in August. So what'd you do with Tom House? You know, work with mechanics, try to fine-tune them some things, but to actually see, you know, the greatest quarterback ever working on his elbow and positioning in what, July, with Edelman looking yoked out of his mind, running routes all day long in the hot California sun, like, it's kind of cool to see what goes into it. So you get a lot there, and I mean, you look into the Brookline mansion and see Brady obsessed with his film. I think it's pretty good. I mean, there's the obvious, you know, marketing aspect to it, but I don't think it's overdone or anything like that.
I think it's been good.
Yeah,
so I liked it. And Hurley, you make a good point.
Thank you. I agree.
The 15 minutes, excellent decision. Like that's
in and out.
It's excellent. You know, so I mean, I think now look, I have some issues with it, but I think on balance, if I'm grading it out, it's good. It's a good product.
So I like the football stuff. The house stuff I like too. And, you know, to me, him watching film, that's...
Phil House, you mean the throwing house?
Yes.
Not his house.
Oh,
house.
No, Tom House.
I like his house, too, though. It's a nice house.
Yeah, and then, but, you know, do I really need to see him running in the sand on the beach? Does that really do it for you?
They framed it pretty well, though.
For a Patriots fan, it does it
where
for
he's like
well.
16 years old saying, I'm not slow, I'm not fast, and then that, you see him still training on it.
I know, but that just comes off to me as so self-serving again. Rocky and Apollo holding hands, running down the beach, jumping in the water together. Yay.
But if you're a Patriots fan, you don't want to see that? Again, the 13-year-old Maz in your bedroom in Waltham, if Larry Bird had put that out, you would consume that like you read about.
Yeah, the 13-year-old would. I'm not 13. I'm telling you what I am now.
Yeah,
I'm
but
telling
you that.
Go ahead.
No, that part of it I could do without. I don't need to see him getting massaged on the table or, you know, doing his little training routines. Or you want to show me the actual stuff mechanically, how you adjust to throwing a football, breaking down film, all that, fine. Running in the sand on the beach, that is there for no other reason than to make me go, yeah, look how hard he works. Look how he works so hard. He works harder than everybody.
But that's on
all that is.
That's on the producer of the documentary, not Tom.
Yeah, it's on him.
And you have to put in these.
There is an element.
No,
though.
It's on Tom. I don't want to hear that, Murray.
No, but there is an element to that. I mean, he is working hard. You think Peyton Manning was doing that at that age? You think Brett Favre was doing that? It is a unique look into this guy's maniacal training regimen that makes him still.
How does
here right
Drew Brees
now.
Train, Hurley?
I don't know. He's short, so there's less to go wrong there.
I don't know. Let's get a film of him running on the beach, and you'd be tooling all over him. Trust me.
I'm okay with it.
I have a question.
But my issue is just the timing and the very nature of it. I mean, he's setting himself up to look like a toolbox if he loses this game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
but he talks about it. Because in that one where he talks about failing in the talent show and everyone watches you fail, like I think the stakes are already so high for him in the Super Bowl.
But what he's doing here is he's telling us that he has all the answers. And that's the tacit message of the whole thing. It's a tacit message of the whole TB12 method. And it's beyond the tacit message of this documentary. It's in there. I mean, all of his film stuff, he's talking about how he processes and how I don't know how I process so well, but I just do, and I can see things before they happen, and the mental part of the game. And he's basically putting out there that I have all the answers.
You know who else said
that? And then the tacit thing is that my physical, you know, well-being has also never been better. So if he loses, he looks like a real tool, which, you know, I give him credit for putting himself out there and putting that extra pressure on himself. But I think that's what he's done there. He's set himself up. No, I don't think he's going to lose. So that's great. Everybody's a winner. But if he does lose,
yeah,
you know,
I just think to him the stakes are already as high as can be. Like if he loses, you saw him watching Super Bowl 42 and just drop a hard F bomb watching a game from 10 years ago. Even though he's won two Super Bowls, he's done all he's done since then. So I don't think it adds anything in his mind if I lose. Oh, this movie will make me look bad. But
not in his mind. But I mean, we'll have a field day. Yeah, people have a field day.
That's
with
good.
It.
That's good news for you. You know who else also said that? That quote. I don't know how I process things like this, but I just do. Rex Ryan in a really in-depth New York Times Magazine article when he was, you know, at his peak with the Jets. It was like, I just see the game differently, and I guess I'm just a genius.
That's another LeBron comment. I mean, that's how he talks about basketball.
Totally. Look at now. I think part of the reason he's doing it too,
which is fine when you win. You see what I'm saying? But when you do that and you lose, then that's...
Well, even week one when he lost, after saying in the offseason, I have all the answers to test, it was like, you better have all the
right.
answers.
That's see, I don't think the whole thing's about TB12, though. I think part of it is about trying to make him more connectable, to show that there is a real guy there, because to this point in his life, he's never shown anybody that. So I think that's part of the objective of this thing, too. And look, to a large degree, it's working. I mean, but the things of him working out, look how hard he works, which I think we already knew. At least I did. I think we all did. I mean, to me, that's just like the Brady people getting some hand lotion and pulling their pants down and having a grand old time.
But he let Edelman in, and Edelman looked better than he did. So that was, you know, a nice sign of humility there.
Felger and Mez. Felger and Mez.